After leaving teaching because of some serious burnout, she vowed to build the community she wished existed when she needed it most. She went from classroom teacher to an educational consultant, instructional designer, and six-figure business owner. Now, she's here to help you achieve happiness and work-life balance, whether inside or outside the classroom. Come join our discussion as we talk about managing teacher burnout, career transitions outside the classroom, starting a side hustle, and everything in between. Here's your host of the Teacher Career Coach Podcast and your new personal cheerleader, Daphne Gomez.
Welcome to the Teacher Career Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Daphne Williams. I receive messages all the time from teachers who either need support or are considering breaking their teaching contracts. When I was a teacher, I had a really close relationship with the union in both of my school districts, and I wanted to bring in an expert to talk more on these subjects and help share his insight. In this episode, I interview Brian Rippett. After working in the classroom for 21 years, he's now the Nevada State Education Association president. In this episode, we talk about what you should know if you're considering breaking a teaching contract and also how to get in contact with advocates in your area to learn more. Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome, Daphne. I appreciate the opportunity.
I want to start off with just asking a little bit about your role and what it is that you do.
All right. So, as you said, my name is Brian Rippett. I'm a 25-year teacher. The last 21 have been teaching chemistry and physics in a 712 secondary school. And I was recently elected president of the Nevada State Education Association. We're a state affiliate of the NEA, the National Education Association, which is the largest labor union in the United States. And so I have, it's a three-year term, so I'm just in the middle of my second year. And so now what I do is I work essentially for educators in the state of Nevada to help them in their careers, to help improve the conditions for students and communities, and advocate for public schools.
Awesome. And that's exactly why I brought you in here today. As we're recording this, we're, in the middle of 2020 in the pandemic. And so there are a lot of concerns that teachers have been having specifically with their contracts. And I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions about teachers' contracts, specifically about teachers' rights. Are teachers' contracts different from state to state, district to district?
Yeah, absolutely they are. There are typically, a set of provisions in all contracts. Like you look at them and see, okay, here's how we define things. Here are the working conditions. Here are the leave provisions. Here are the salary and benefits. So there are a lot of common themes, but each contract is bargained locally, which means each school district has its own unique individual contract. And that's something that we absolutely support, is the local bargaining and local control with that. So the very specifics would be different in district to district, state to state.
I know a lot of teachers are in a position where they're thinking of going on like a stress leave or a health leave of some sort, and they're a little unsure of what they should be looking at in their contract or whether or not they even have the right to do so. Do you have any insight into what type of terminology might be in their contract that they should be looking at?
Sure. With the caveat that in most states and districts, there's an assumption that once you agree to work for the school year, you're bound by contract to work for the school year. So once the school year has begun, it's more difficult to move away, or you have to take some more considerations. And that comes from the idea that there really needs to be continuity in the children's lives and the community of the school, to make sure that whoever the experts are in reading or in the counselor or whoever, that we can count on them being there. So that's why it's a little bit more difficult for mid-year. Year to year, of course, people have their choice whether they're going to sign. Typically, they have something called a letter of intent or a renewal letter, where in the spring at some point the secretary or the principal, they remind you, or they come around and say, here's your offer for next year. And you're basically agreeing, okay, I'm going to sign on for the next year. Now, in these circumstances with COVID, it's all mixed up. And I know there's so many more emotions and more, more factors to consider. But in terms of contract language, there's a couple of things that most contracts will have. One would be leave of absence. And within leave of absence, often there is a short term, there's long term, there's extended. So you want to look at in there and see if there's anything that can fit your situation. Now, as we're in November, we're getting close in most cases to a change of semester or change in trimester. And some districts allow for leave at a semester at a time. And once again, that goes to the planning. If you're trying to do a master schedule in a, in a middle school or a high school, you need to have people that are going to teach the courses. But they can do some scheduling changes sometimes in the semester. So there might be a opportunity to find semester leave.
With leave of absence, are there any stipulations, at least within your state or your districts that you work with, that they need to have in place to even request a leave of absence?
That really varies district to district. A lot of contracts include a leave of absence where you just are taking a year off. I know several teachers that decided to go that route. Now, what goes on there is you don't have any, you're not getting paid, obviously. You're a leave from your job. And so that's allowed. It needs to be done, as I said, before the school year starts most often or at the semester. But there are usually provisions in a lot of contracts that you want to take a year off. You might need to state a reason, but quite often they're pretty generous. Once you start talking to folks, whether it's, at your building level principal or district administration, and even school board members, the people are a lot more human, surprisingly, than sometimes we expect. We think that you're locked into this contract and they're not going to let you do something. But really, most people want the best for most other people. And if you're an individual that really wants to take a break, and especially in this time of COVID, what I've been finding is districts and administrators are wanting to help find a solution.
So does it feel like maybe people who have been communicating with one another, like at a school site, they might say, there are no other options for us. We're stuck in this situation, but they haven't taken that next step to start to talk about what their rights are without actually going in to look for their next actions.
Yeah, I could agree with that. And that's not a function of COVID. That seems to be human nature, where you kind of get into a stir about something and don't think about reaching out. So folks really should reach out to their building representative or their local steward. It varies depending on what region of the country or state you're in. Or look up, if you're in a large district, you might need to look on the website, who are my local leaders? Every union should have a website. Most have Twitter accounts, where you can look up and see, okay, who is the vice president? Who is the president? Who is the secretary? Who are the board members? And just contact them. That's their job, is to, answer questions and reach out. And really, you can't be helped if you keep it all to yourself. Most folks have some experience or in answering these questions, or they'll find a way to get an answer for you.
Are union representatives bound by any sort of secrecy? Like, I don't know the right word for that. Are they bound by any sort of like secrecy regulations, where if I told a union representative I'm thinking of leaving, if they happen to be really good friends with my principal, would they be able to kind of, hey, on the slide, Ms. Williams is thinking of leaving your class or leaving your school?
That once again would really depend on state and local laws, because every state has different. But generally speaking, yes, there is an understanding that when you go to your union representative, it is a private conversation. It's not the legal definition of attorney-client privilege in that sense, but it is a privileged conversation that's not to be shared. And then aside from that, the individual could certainly say, I'm asking that you don't share this with anyone, but I have a question. And that just reminds the individual not to talk about it. Because sometimes folks will, you know, spread some information, you know, this is, you know, just generally speaking, without really realizing that they're spreading it. They're just kind of wondering in another group. But if you start the conversation with saying, I have a question and I ask that you not share it with anybody, that lets the person know, the representative or whoever it might be, that you want it kept quiet.
Okay, that's really great to know. Thank you so much. As we were just talking about a leave of absence, let's say that it's not during the semester and there's something that happens. Maybe the school's going back into in-person teaching and we have a loved one at home that is very high risk, and a teacher, you know, decides that they need to just leave the position kind of abruptly. This is actually something that just happened to a really close personal friend of mine. So she ended up having to put in her letter of resignation. Can a union in that situation fight on behalf of the teacher to not have the teacher's license revoked if that was already written into the contract?
Well, that's a real specific question, which is, you know, when you say that, I was with you all the way to the end in terms of having a license revoked, which let me just back up a little bit. If you were to break a contract, a teaching contract, the assumption is you're going to stay there the whole year. That is kind of the threat. Well, they could take your license.
Mm-hmm.
And what people need to understand is in areas where there's a union bargain contract, there are protections, meaning it is not something your supervisor at the school, which, you know, could be a vice principal or a principal, they don't get to just take your contract. That's not allowed. I mean, your license. Typically, the superintendent doesn't get to just take your license. Quite often, it's a much more involved process than that. And so the unions around the country and local associations and your representatives are there to help you navigate that and advocate on your behalf to make sure that doesn't happen. In a situation where we are now, we're literally in a pandemic. Everyone knows that. It would be very surprising if someone were to have their license to teach revoked based on health and safety concerns, so long as they got their representatives involved. The case will not hold up. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not a decision of an individual. It's typically the state board of education or the state licensing board or the department of education, along with the school board, that has to go through this. So they'd have to be incredibly vindictive. Now, that being said, sometimes local officials can be vindictive, and maybe this is just push them over the edge. And that's an opportunity to make sure you have your local representatives and your union in the loop, so they know. And often it'll take just one call from what we call a Uniserv director or a local rep to say, hey, what's going on here? And they knock it off. They don't pull a license. I've been in my district now over 21 years. I cannot think of an instance where someone's license has been, they've gone through that process. And we have people leave every year for various reasons. So it's really more of a threat than a reality, I guess.
Even myself, when I was teaching, I didn't really understand what my contract rights were. And I knew that I signed a letter of intent to return one school year after I had worked at a district for a couple of years. And I was terrified that I signed that letter of intent and actually in that window of time got a position at a different district. I was wanting to move to Los Angeles to be with my then boyfriend, now fiance. And I was terrified, like, oh, I don't know if they're going to let me break this contract and move to this different district. And all I had to do was write a simple letter. Like, I talked to my union. I let them know what was up. And I just wrote a letter and they said, okay, we're removing you from this next year's contract. I think maybe I did even sign the contract for the following year, but it was still during the summer.
Yeah, right. So the letters of intent are just to, you know, get someone to commit. Are you coming back or not? And that's for planning purposes. It doesn't, you don't become an indentured servant where you must, and they're going to try and wreck you. So what typically there's two levels. There's a letter of intent, which in a lot of cases is not viewed as a contract. You're just saying, yeah, I plan to come back. And then at some point, whether it's in the summer or the beginning of the year, and I've actually had multiple experiences in my career where it's the end of the year I've been teaching, where they say, oh yeah, here's your contract. We need you to sign this. And so there's a lot of wiggle room in there in terms of if you're changing your mind. And the union representatives can definitely help you navigate that. And they're there to support you and find what's best for you. So I want to go back to the contract versus letter of intent in terms of if you plan to leave. You really should, teachers should really get a handle on, have I actually signed a contract, or was it just a letter of intent? Because there is in most states a difference there. And just mentioning, well, we haven't signed our contracts yet, really has central office administrators back off when like, oh yeah, we haven't gotten around to that yet. So knowing what you have signed and what you've committed to is important in the process.
Besides just contract negotiations and everything COVID related, you know, the unions do so much to help support teachers, especially if they feel like something is happening that's unfair or unjust and making them unhappy in their position. Can you tell me some of the most common ways that unions intervene for teachers on their behalfs? If a student might be threatening a teacher and making them feel unsafe, or if a parent is bullying a teacher and the administrator isn't helping, or what are the most common situations that unions support teachers on?
So I want to say that the union is made up of its members, and the members do the work. And so really it is a professional community of supporting each other. And quite often in teaching, we are alone in our rooms when we close our doors. And there's, even in a large school or a school that gets along from step point, it can be isolating and kind of lonely. So one of the biggest roles of the union is to provide that community and know that you're not alone. So most schools should have what we call a billing representative. So somebody who has volunteered to sort of be the go-to person for questions like that. And so you could go to your billing representative and say, hey, I've got this issue with a kid or a parent, and I'm not feeling supported by the principal. And they can either problem solve or agree to go, you know, schedule a meeting and talk with the principal. There's also, you know, your local elected leaders and regional leaders and state leaders. There's all these levels of advocacy that can help you problem solve and get the help that you need.
What if a teacher goes to their building representative and the building representative and them don't see eye to eye on that situation? Is there a next step that teacher should do? Is there another chain of command that they should potentially reach out to?
I'll push back just a little bit on that. So the role of the billing representative is to represent you. That being said, you know, in everyone's life, there are certain maybe personality conflicts or something that might have been that's underlying. So you certainly, if the member is uncomfortable with that particular billing representative, larger schools will have multiple representatives. They could go to a neighboring school and ask there. They could once again look up the elected leadership for the overall local or unit. So say, hey, who's the VP? Who's the treasurer? Who's the president? And ask them. And between that, there should be enough folks that are able to help you out and get you to the next step.
No, that's absolutely great advice. I actually didn't know that it was a possibility that you could reach out to a neighboring school's building representative. So I think if you felt like you were in a situation where you weren't necessarily comfortable, or you wanted to maybe get like a second opinion, you could always reach out to another person. And then if multiple people continue to kind of tell you the same thing, you might need to reflect and adjust what is going on in your personal situation and use their advice, because they do have all of the knowledge of how specifically you're protected.
People want to be heard, and they want to not be isolated. And so quite often it's, you know, sharing the situation and getting it out and having someone listen is as much as they need. And there's been, I mean, countless times where someone is really upset about something, and they would come to me when I was a building rep or a local leader, and, you know, tell their story, listen. And by the end of them getting out, they're like, you say, okay, so what do we do next? Like as the person listening, as the building rep, okay, what should we do next? Do we want to schedule an appointment with the administrator? Do we? And like, ah, no, it's okay. I'm okay now. I'm good now. I just need to get it out. And so your example of if the person's not comfortable with their building rep for whatever reason, and typically it's something personal from the past, not related to the incident, just finding another person in the union to talk to. And it could be your neighbor next door, like in the classroom next door, down the hall, that's also a member, and talking to them. And so once again, I just want to say that, you know, the union is made up of its members, and the strength comes from the membership and working for what's best in our schools and for our students. And so long as we have that in mind, we can find solutions to just about any issue. There is so much more than simply going to a meeting, because that's kind of what's, hey, come to a meeting. But really, if you're asked, or if you notice that there is a monthly meeting, there's the flyer, go ahead and schedule that. You don't have to go for life. Go once, but also bring someone else from your school or your wing or your department and find out what's going on. And the other part before that, you know, as teachers, we like to be prepared. So go ahead and send an email to whether it's the secretary or the local president. Say, hey, I'm interested in coming to the next meeting. Is there anything I should know, or what are we working on? And that will prime, you know, the folks that, hey, we're going to have some new people here. And our strength is really in our numbers. And so a lot of unions, a lot of locals are really active in public service, advocating for funding, racial and social justice issues. And so it's much more than bargaining a contract, even though that is very important, and maintain the contract and making sure the agreements are followed. The union is much more than that. And so getting involved in some of those other opportunities can make us stronger.
What about teachers or schools that are in different states that are non-union states? Is there anything that they can do? And I know that we have a limited time, so you can't probably lay out all the steps, but is there any way that they can start to fight, to advocate, to become a unionized district or state?
So it's really about organizing and having a common issue. And so even in states that are non-union, advocating, like organizing in terms of your own school around an issue, and then going to the decision makers. Decision makers, they listen to the folks that they represent, you know, even though sometimes it seems like they don't. And if it's one person just talking in the wind, that's not a big deal. But if you organize and have a majority of teachers at a certain school, then you have real power. And as you continue to build these relationships with each other, then you can make some change. In terms of formally unionizing, in terms of bargaining contracts, all states are allowed to have unions. It's just but their roles are defined mostly by state laws. So the actual union itself is present. We have affiliates in all 50 states, and DC and around in some of the territories. But some states can bargain the contract, and others are not allowed to bargain their contract. And so those that are much more involved in, or not much more involved, but they focus on the social justice issues and advocating for kids in different ways.
That's great to know. I don't think that I even was aware that they were active in all of the states. And I'm pretty sure that that's probably going to be news to a lot of my listeners. So thank you so much for bringing awareness to that.
It was more about collective action. where a group of people go to the decision makers and ask for change, present conditions, and eventually get to a place where you demand change. There are a lot of cases, people like, oh, I'm going to go to the absolute nth degree. But there, you know, just like in international relations, there's a lot of levels below, you know, like a military attack or something like that. You want to solve things at the lowest possible level. You know, and people coming together around a common good, which public schools are a common good, and doing what's best for kids, that is the ultimate driver of what we do as unions and as the National Education Association and our affiliates. So getting involved locally is how you make the change.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you're so passionate about this, and I'm sure you are a wealth of knowledge, and I would love to have you on for another 2 hours, but we have a little bit of limited time, and I wanted to ask if you have favorite resources or places that you refer teachers to if they're looking for more advice or support or just information on these important issues.
So I would point people to NEA.org. In there, they've got a link for your rights in the workplace, and then also professional excellence. So, you know, becoming a better, more effective educator and advocating for change. Those are some of the key things there. Also, most of the state affiliates, including ours in Nevada, NSEA, the Nevada State Education Association, we have done presentations and seminars, you know, on legal rights, what you can do and what you should do and how to go about getting the improvements. So reaching out to your state affiliate and NEA.org, which is the National Education Association. There are some good resources there, whether it's Corona related or professional excellence related, or just advocating for things like stopping the test and punish or the ranking and sorting of schools and kids, which I think is driving the negative feelings for teachers. If we can get rid of the testing and punishing or the ranking and sorting, then our teachers can thrive and do what they got into the business for.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of those regulations are why so many teachers struggle with burnout, or they feel like they don't have autonomy in their position.
I agree. Absolutely. The autonomy, there is a level of professional respect that needs to be restored to educators. We don't go into your primary care physician and there aren't other people dictating how and when and what and why. They get to make the best decision based on their knowledge, their license, their training, and their conversations with you. Whereas teachers, that autonomy has been taken away in a lot of respects. And we have these, you know, outside forces that really don't understand the nature of children or human nature. They just want a number and they want a ranking. And that's not how kids are. That's not how people are. We're all want to get better every week. And that's what we should strive for, rather than these artificial, I need to get 3 stars on my school or I'm going to be punished and sent to the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Do you have anything else that you would want to add that we did not discuss today?
I would like to say that once again, you are the union. The union is not an outside force that just does things on its own. The best way that we can improve the condition for our students and the working conditions for our colleagues and ourselves is to get involved locally and advocate for those changes and work together. And I think that's where I'd leave it.
Thank you so much for joining us, Brian. I'm really excited to hear all the changes that you're making and to see how you've been supporting teachers throughout your state. You're doing such great work, and I'm really, really grateful that you took the time to talk to us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. And yeah, it's a great profession.
Linking NEA.org to this episode's show notes so that you can find some of those great resources that Brian mentioned in our interview. As you probably heard us mention, this interview was actually recorded in late November 2020. If you're listening in real time, this is released on January 21st, 2021. And yesterday, we introduced a new administration into the White House. I truly believe that it's a huge day for educators and not just the nation in general. It's so easy to feel jaded, pessimistic, to not believe that those in power care about education. I 100% understand those concerns. But I do have hope for a positive change and a hope that this administration will bring in true advocates for teachers' rights, for teacher funding, and equity in education. I look forward to seeing the potential impact that having an NEA member and teacher as the First Lady in the White House will bring. Until next time, I'll see you on the next episode of the Teacher Career Coach podcast.